Greetings, and thanks for listening to Bear Soup. Bubbling up in the Bear Soup hot tub for this program,
another selection from Peter Henin's book, Fairies, Bears, and Leathermen.
Mr. Bear of the Year 2008, smell me. An excerpt from the Lewis Merrick story, Fur Runner, very hot and hairy fiction from Spunk Daddy's Book Nook. Definitely not safe for the office. Shoutouts, announcements, and the usual brilliant bear puns and furry audio falderall. We're locked and loaded for what otter? So drop trow and drop in with an adult beverage of your choice and relax. You're just in time for Bear Soup. Welcome back to Bear Soup. This is your host, Ron Serratia, casting my pod to you through the mysterious tubes of the internets from southeastern coastal Connecticut. You're listening to episode number 60 of the Bear Soup podcast, streaming online at bearradio.net, Mondays and Wednesdays, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. Bear Soup is also available through our free iTunes subscription and download service. Access to the Bear Soup archives through the Bear Soup tab on ronserratia.com. Presumably you can tell without seeing me that I'm recording this stark naked in a steamy outdoor hot tub, because that's what the rubber duckies are for. Clothing optional for you. Bear Soup is proudly sponsored by our buds at Barebones Books. Check them out at BearBonesBooks.com.
Now, did you know that Bear Soup has a new Facebook page? Check it out. You can become a fan of Bear Soup and keep up with the latest episodes. Just go to Facebook and type in the search for Bear Soup.
Season's greetings. This is Ron Serratia from Bear Soup, wishing all our Bear Radio listeners a very happy Solstice, Hanu, Christmas, Kwanzaa, Saturnalia, and a delightful and safe new year.
As mentioned, Bear Soup has been nominated again for Best of the Bears, so be sure to head to CompleteBear.com to vote for the show.
It's the gayest show in the f***ing world!
You can vote daily from now until the end of December, so go now, while you're probably online anyway, and send some love our way, okay?
And so I've been considering, as Mr. Bear of the Year, what this distinction means. It's not like anyone really noted it this year or cared, but was one interview. The Northeast Ursamen also, my home bear club, which was Bear Club of the Year 2008, had a very nice event for me to read from my books in P-Town during Summer Bear Week. But otherwise, it's been a year of quiet acclaim for Mr. Bear of the Year 2008. No sash, no crown, no prize, no cash award, no certificate, no discount. I guess just about all I can claim is bragging rights. All of the guys nominated for Best Bear Podcast are doing a great job, and we here at Bear Soup invite you all to join us in the BS hot tub anytime. Here we go. MichaelCarrera.com, Bear Podcast, Osos y Ositos, Bearotic, Bear Bones, Twisted Ramblings, Cubs Out Loud, Joe My God, Bears in the City, The Cubby House Podcast, and Kuma TV. Good work, man, and best of luck.
Mike from The Complete Bear has agreed to announce the winners of the 2009 contest on Bear Soup, and wouldn't it be embarrassing if he made the announcements and we didn't win? So, I have to compete against shows with 2, 4, 5, 12 hosts even. So, please, vote for Bear Soup in the Complete Bears poll early and often.
And thanks.
I am so pleased to announce the publication in hardcover of my anthology that was named a finalist in the Lambda Literary Awards this last year, entitled Bisexual Perspectives on the Life and Work of Alfred C. Kinsey. I've read from part of the book on Bear Soup before, but I'd like to read to you from the opening chapter, Kinsey and Beyond, Past, Present, and Future Considerations for Research on Male Bisexuality, written by Indiana University professors Brian Dodge and Michael Reese, and the Kinsey Institute Director Emeritus Paul H. Gebhard, who was one of the original members of the Kinsey research team. When Gebhard was asked for his impressions of our contemporary treatment of bisexuality, he summed up his impressions in one sentence. Overall, Kinsey would be disappointed. Gebhard offered his perspectives on the history of bisexuality research over the past 60 years and shared his views about how they would be perceived by Kinsey today. According to Gebhard, Kinsey would be pleased to see the emancipation of homosexuality, that is, the movement away from a disease-based view of it, but horrified to see that most research today only considers homosexuality and bisexuality for the potential contributions to disease transmission, such as HIV/AIDS and other sexually transmitted infections. Additionally, Kinsey would be disheartened that so little emancipation seems to have been granted to bisexuals, that they continue to be viewed as the unhappy minority, and that our society expects people to be exclusively straight or gay, and that we still tell people to make up your mind. He would likely see this as a major societal transgression among heterosexual and homosexual communities in the movement toward sexual liberation. Last, Kinsey would be very critical of the recent sweeping generalizations on bisexuality based solely on limited studies, which Gebhard labels as too essentialist and lacking in their ability to account for the wide range of social and cultural factors that are known to influence one's sexuality. Kinsey, too, would likely see this as a significant step backward in sexuality research. And that was a section from the opening chapter of Bisexual Perspectives on the Life and Work of Alfred C. Kinsey. For a link to the book, please go to my website. Here's another selection from Peter Henin's book, Fairies, Bears, and Leathermen, which references my book, Bears on Bears, from Chapter 4, entitled Bear Bodies, Bear Masculinity. While in the field, I observed a wide degree of variance in identity investment. A minority of those who attend bear events probably do not identify as bears at all. A larger segment self-identify as bears, but beyond cultivating the traditional bear look, it is not an important part of their self-presentation. But for another large segment of the community, more deliberate signaling seems to indicate a deeper investment in bear identity. For example, while at bear camp, I saw a number of vanity license plates with bear themes, such as Cub, Little Cub, Woofy, and Bear Seeker. T-shirts included slogans such as Motor City Bears, Bear Patrol, I Have the Body of a God, unfortunately it's Buddha, Got Fur, advertising the Lone Star Saloon, Bear Pride 2001, from the annual Memorial Day celebration in Chicago, a cartoon of an anthropomorphized bear on another gay pride t-shirt, and several hats with various bear images on them. Bear paw tattoos are popular with some, especially younger bears. I asked Travis, in his early 20s, about his new tattoo. I got my beer paw tattoo in September. It's almost, I always wanted to get one, specifically also because I saw a lot of other guys that had them. And you know, I'm normally somebody who doesn't like to do what everybody else does. But when it came to the beer paw, I think to some people it almost is considered, I don't want to say rite of passage, but it almost seems that way, that getting your beer paw tattoo almost makes it in some way, quote unquote, official. When I asked Don if he had any paraphernalia in his apartment, he laughed and told me of his extensive collection, which includes the head of a real bear, stuffed and mounted. I mean, it's one of those, yeah, they can't help but notice. I mean, there's a big, huge polar bear head right in the front of the door when you walk in. Actually, you know, I put it on the patio to scare the squirrels away for a bit. It's just a big old polar bear head. He also told me of his hopes for expanding the collection. Yeah, I go out there and buy certain objects with bears. I mean, I'll be honest, there's a Baccarat bear sitting in a nearby shop, you know. I walk by when I go to Starbucks and it's like, I want that. And it's just, you know, just really an ice crystal polar bear. So who has $300 to buy a crystal polar bear? So Brian introduces an essentialist element when I asked him about such extensive collections, attributing the impulse to an innate bear-loving spirit. I think it's funny because you coincidentally will hear people talk about there are lots of guys in the bear group who sort of collected bears and teddy bears and stuff like that long before they knew. You know, long before they would have even known or before the bear group even started anywhere. The varying degrees of investment in bear identity correspond roughly to Breckus's concept of identity density. But here we encounter an interesting paradox. Breckus's research on game men's identity construction is based on their status as a marked, or recognizably different, social group. Here we have a group of gay men who have forged a community wherein they collaborate to unmark themselves in the eyes of the larger public. They're just regular guys. But in doing so, they create a new kind of marking for themselves within the gay community. Breckus describes non-bear gay men who pursue normalization by living in the suburbs and downplaying any distinct attributes arising from their sexual orientation as integrators. Yet his description of integrators does not quite capture the way bears, in pursuing normalization, actually make themselves more distinct. Most gay men recognize bear as a marked subcultural formation, and most can describe a typical bear. This identity pickle may partially explain why bears have yet to register as a distinct social type among heterosexuals. The idea of erasing difference is, after all, central to the bear project. But how then does one evaluate bears in terms of their identity density? If it is defined as the degree to which identity is packaged and presented in a concentrated or diluted form, bears are actively concentrating on diluting their identities. With respect to social class, Les Wright observes that bears' naturalness registers in the key of blue collar. Bears present an image of working class masculinity, yet many, if not most, are middle class. And that was a section from Peter Hennin's book, Fairies, Bears, and Leathermen. And now, it's time for the Best Bear Bedtime Stories, brought to you by our sponsor, Bear Bones Books. This week, the story, Fur Runners, by Lewis Merrick.
Definitely not safe for the office.
The people kept their distance from me in the little town. In their eyes, I was a foreigner. A fur-runner, as they pronounce it. Fine with me. I came there to write, and I was perfectly happy not to be disturbed. Behind my back they called me Bear Man, because I lived so deep in the woods and because I'm so hairy. You get to my cabin, it's owned by a friend who hasn't been there in years, by going up a road that starts in gravel and turns to dirt and then ends when the trees get too dense to drive through. And even then it's a hike over a ridge before you get to the door. No electricity. a well with a hand pump for water. The only illumination is from the stars and an oil lamp, which casts just enough light over my notebook so I can write through the night. Bear man. They can call me what they want. I know they're curious and maybe a little afraid. I'm big, 6'4" or so, and the years of working out have made me sturdy. And their curiosity was piqued even more when Marco showed up. He's a friend from New York, big Italian guy with as much hair as I have and dark Sicilian looks. Marco was a model, but now he runs one of the top agencies. He discovered Beta Ignite, kept her off drugs, and placed her on the covers of every fashion magazine in the world. He's a fur runner too, and I love when he runs his fur against mine and his big sausage up my ass. The townspeople smile, of course, whenever I go by. They say, "How do?" In the church, they move over so I can take a seat in the pews, but in the back of their minds, they'd like to run me out. But I wasn't going to leave until I finished this book. My publisher was breathing down my neck, and I could only finish it when I was free of all distractions. Marco, well, Marco was only there for a week. I wrote to Marco to meet me at Martha's Diner, because he'd never find my place by himself. Martha's Diner is the only place to eat in town. Martha makes her own pies, and the chicken is so fresh you'd think she'd just grabbed it from the coop. The coffee is rich and thick and gives me a good kick. I was sitting in the diner waiting for Marco, and Wally was serving me. He's Martha's son. She owns the place. I don't know what happened to Martha's husband, but I never saw a sign of him. Wally helps his mom, usually in the kitchen, but sometimes at the tables. He's just out of high school, and he's going to the state college on scholarship.
"And get out of here,"
he once told me in a whisper. Wally whispers to me even if no one is in the diner. He's the only one who speaks to me in the entire town. Sometimes he even sits down at my table, the glass, coffee, carafe in his hand. I know why he's nervous talking to me, even if he doesn't. Wally is an all-American boy, 6 foot, but not willowy, with coarse blonde hair naturally screwed into tight curls and an amazing peaches and cream complexion. I know why he's nervous talking to me, even if he doesn't. Wally is an all-American boy, 6 foot, but not willowy, with coarse blonde hair naturally screwed into tight curls and an amazing peaches and cream complexion. The smile, so shy with me, grows dazzling when one of the high school girls comes in asking for something. It's clear he's popular, and he talks to them in an easy, open way. I can tell, even if they can't, that there isn't the slightest desire in his voice, because I've heard that desire gurgling ever so softly behind his whisper. He's queer, all right. I can tell it from the way he looks at me, as if he would like to dive into my eyes and swim inside, or maybe wrestle me to the ground until I mastered him. He'd want to lose. But if he had it bad for me, it was almost comic what happened when Marco came through the door. From my window, I could see Marco get out of the rented car and swagger up the short walk. He's retained that rolling gait he learned as a runway model. His $300 t-shirt pulled tight against his body and his nipples, those extraordinary volcanic cones jutting out. His chest hair rolled over the collar like a little ruff. The loose jeans were cut in such a way that when he walked, they showed the enormous length of his dick. He looked straight ahead with those mirrored insect-looking glasses that I hate to see him wear because they hide his eyes, which are as sharp as two arrows headed straight through your heart. I watched Marco walk into the diner, but Wally only saw him when the little bell at the front door tinkled. The kid nearly dropped the carafe he was holding on his way to giving me a warm-up. He was paralyzed. Then his jaw dropped, and his cock pushed out from his boxers. Marco looked him over and then saw me waving to him from the corner. "Hey, buddy." I stood up and we embraced. Then he kissed me on both cheeks so he could whisper,
"What's with the kid?"
into my ear. "Tell you later," I answered. Marco sat down. It took a while for Wally to gather his sense and grab the dirty, little-used menu, but he was still unaware of the rod he'd thrown in his pants. He stood next to Marco and turned to give him the menu.
"Hey, kid, don't poke me in the eye with that thing."
Marco laughed and put his hand on the bulge to push it away.
"Oh, God."
Wally groaned and ran back into the kitchen. Marco leaned over to me.
"I do believe I made the kid come."
"Why not?" I answered. "You always make me come."
"But not after only one touch.
Well, I'm not 18, and I bet that's the first time any guy ever touched his hard dick.
Well, I guess it was the first time anyone ever touched his hard dick.
Marco looked over the menu, then flipped it aside.
What's good? I've been traveling all day to get here.
The chicken's always fine.
Chicken it is.
And with that, Wally returned to take our orders, an apron now covering the front of his pants. I'd already been staying in the cabin a few months, and once I got Marco back there, I was almost as ready to shoot as Wally. I'd like to rip those clothes off you, I told him.
Well, why don't you?
And I took my teeth and yanked the t-shirt off, and with it a hair or two. Marco yowled with his telling mixture of pain and delight. The jeans, already loose, got pulled off with one yank, and there he was, naked on the mattress on the floor. The body was perfect, only it was manlier than ever, shaggy with hair. His dick looked like a missile ready for launching, but it could wait. What I wanted were his big, heavy balls. They looked like those sacks in pirate movies filled with doubloons, only these were filled with something even more precious. Once down at his balls, I could get the rich, musty smell of his manhood. I wouldn't allow him to shower for at least 2 days, and I began to get some spit on his ass. He grabbed his legs so I could pull his crack open. There was hair almost up to the little anus with its pink lips that needed pulling apart, a finger or two to explore inside. I couldn't so much hear as feel the hum of pleasure coming from Marco's throat. He reached for his pants and pulled out a condom. No more preliminaries? We have all week.
I haven't had it in months, not since you left, and I don't want to wait any more.
He didn't have to say more. In seconds, the sheath was rolled down my not unsubstantial dick and covered with great gobs of spit. Another gob on his asshole, and I rested the head of my dick on that pretty ring that glowed in the light of the lantern. I knew Marco likes it rough, but I wanted to tease him. I pressed down with only the slightest pressure, and I could feel that portal giving way. He was that hungry, but I went no further. I heard a little moan, and then I felt his fingers on the back of my legs pulling me toward him. He moved his butt a little toward me, and my dickhead went in just a little more. He tried again to move toward me, and I moved away. "Shh," I whispered. "Shh." He let go of my thigh. He relaxed. I was in charge. And then I pushed forward with all my might. He cried in surprise with the intense combination of pain and delight. I heard, and the second cry commingled desire and despair. But the sound didn't come from Marco. It was from someone outside our window. In an instant, we were both on our feet, running outside. We couldn't see very much. There was only a quarter moon, but there was enough that we could make out the person ahead of us. The guy was fast, whoever he was, and the stones were rough on my bare feet. He was over the ridge, and I could see that he was heading for a pickup parked beside ours. He was opening the door, but at that moment, his pants slid down to his thighs, and he was tangled up in them. He reached down with his right hand to pull them up, but it gave me just enough time to grab it and pull the arm back. He tried to push me off, but I was stronger and soon got the other arm, and I yanked the two high so there would be some pain. Marco was at my side. He brought some ropes that we had been planning to use for other purposes and tied the guy's arms and then his kicking legs. We carried the peeping Tom back to the cabin, but by then he had given up fighting. He swung between us like a bagged deer.
What do you plan to do to him?
Marco asked as we walked through the woods. I was sure he had some ideas of his own. Something he won't forget, I answered. Then Marco and I were silent, and the man between us breathed rapidly with fear. We swung the door open and hauled him in feet first. The lantern light now revealed who it was.
Wally!
I exclaimed in mock surprise, because I had guessed who the perpetrator was midway in our race to the car. Wally, what are you doing here?
It was so beautiful,
he said.
It?
It?
What do you mean by it?
What you were doing, it was so beautiful. I knew it would be. The two of you are so beyond anything I've ever seen here. And I could tell you were more than friends, even before he touched my prick. Did you know I came when he touched me?
I had a pretty good idea.
Marco told him, and Wally blushed. I don't know what came over me. As soon as you guys left, I called my mom and asked her to take over at the diner so I could follow you. I didn't mean any harm. I had no idea what I was going to do, but I wanted to talk to you. I wanted to see you, and it was beautiful.
It is beautiful, and so are you,
Marco said with that voice that I knew would melt him. You think I am?
Yes, I do.
But I'm not big like you two guys.
Well, I don't know, I said, and I reached into his pants and pulled out his dick, and in a few seconds, as I rolled it with my thumb, it came fully alive. It was much longer than I thought it would be, and a lot thicker. Believe me, you're big enough to suit any guy, and I bent over to kiss him. His lips were soft and warm, and they parted so I could get my tongue between them. Then Marco went down to get his bit of sugar while I began sucking the boy's dick. In no time, the bindings were down, not just the ropes around Wally's hands and feet, but the bindings on his psyche. He couldn't wait to get his first taste of cock, and he took to dick like a rabbit takes to lettuce.
And if you want to hear the exciting conclusion of Fur Runners, be sure to check out the forthcoming anthology, Bears in the Wild, from Bare Bones Books.
In Kevin Bowe's film, A Bear Story, there's a Bears for Bears benefit beer bust for the preservation of four-legged bears. And I have this idea that I'd like to share with you, and I hope you can share with other folks, particularly if you are a member of a bear club anywhere around the nation or around the world. Perhaps some of the fundraising efforts that bear clubs do could actually be directed towards organizations like the National Resources Defense Council and the World Wildlife Fund that are really working hard to ensure the preservation of four-legged bears. So I want to encourage Bear Soup listeners to consider contacting your local bear club and recommending that they start to undertake fundraising for environmental causes, particularly affecting the lives of four-legged bears.
Shoutouts go to Music by the Mermen. You've been listening to program
number 60 of the Bear Soup podcast.
Check out the Bear Soup page on my website, www.ronsarisha.com. Bear Soup is news, views, skews, and schmooze for the bear community, with bear author and editor Ron Sarisha named Bear of the Year 2008. I get to say it still a whole nother month. Bubbles for Bear Soup Hot Tub are powered by our sponsor, Bare Bones Books. Check out their fine literature by bear authors at barebonesbooks.com, BEARBONESBOOKS.com. Got feedback? Send it to me at bearsoup@gmail.com. That's it for this show. Thanks again for listening to Bear Soup.